Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We got a special Easter show for you on this Easter Monday. What a wonderful time of year. We'll talk a little bit about the Easter season. What are we supposed to do in the Easter season? It's funny, I always think Catholics know exactly what to do in Lent. They have no idea what to do for the Easter season. So we'll talk about that and many other things because we got a flannel panel for Easter Monday. Where we talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. The news today is the Lord is risen. I know you've heard that before, but think about that. Think about that as still the news, and it's still true. And nobody, it's not a, like a old debunked old-timey myth or something. The Lord is truly risen. And so that's news that can give our hearts joy. We're all wearing flannel, so this will be an official episode of the flannel panel. We're joined by Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers, writer extraordinaire. Hello, Joe Heschmeyer. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you, too. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you very much. And also with us, the president of Catholic Answers, in a very fine flannel, Chris Check. Happy Easter, Chris.
Resurrexit, sicut dixit.
Oh, no, I can't remember the Latin response. Can you do it, Joe? He's risen as he said.
This one's on you. He didn't say it to me.
Resurrexit, sicut dixit. Ah!
That's all right, gentlemen. It's fine.
I'm sorry that I don't know. He's risen as he said.
As he said. Well, that's my favorite.
Oh, no, maybe that is the response.
That is the response.
Yeah, that, okay.
It is the response. It's in the Regina Caeli.
Yeah.
But I like that one because I love that as he said. We'll talk about that later.
I love that, too. Why? What's Easter? Talk about whatever you want. We'll talk about the resurrection. Go for it, man.
Well, of course, this is what the angel says to the women.
Oh, yes.
So the angels in Luke and who's the other one, Joe?
Matthew.
Thank you.
I don't know the context of what I'm.
The angel at the tomb.
I mean, I've got three other choices, but I don't know which thing you're asking about.
Okay, so in Luke there are two angels, in Matthew there's just one. It doesn't mean there weren't two, but Matthew only tells about one. But Luke does give us a little more detail.
And he says.
But he says to the women, he's risen, just as he said.
Yeah.
And so there's a kind of. Well, it's a little scold.
Yeah, right. But it's also...
He told you he was going to rise from the dead. What are you doing here? Why do you seek the living among the dead?
But it also is a vindication of the Lord, of all of his sayings in a certain
right,
way. Like,
right.
If he says it, it is going to happen. Like, this vindicates everything he ever said.
So that's my...
Right. And in Luke, he says, why do you seek the living among the dead? Which is a delightful... Yeah, like you say, there's a slightly scolding attitude towards it. And I think it also helps to answer... A notable omission. Like, who do we not see on Easter Sunday?
Jesus. Or briefly,
Mary.
We see him talking. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
She's not, like, she's with him at the crucifixion, and she's a notable omission from the group of women on Easter morning because she seems to be the only one who gets not to be looking for the living among the dead.
Ah, yeah. Isn't that a great insight, Joe? Yeah. She's like.
And I would even give a second detail. Because Luke also is the only one who mentions... I mean, so what's the only detail we get between Jesus' infancy and his adult ministry?
What, the only detail of what?
The
temple, when he stayed at the temple.
Yeah, finding him in the temple in Luke 2. And the question is why? What is so important about this moment that of all of the possible events from the life of Christ for 30 years, this is the one that was worth mentioning? And I think the answer to that is this. Like, when does the finding in the temple happen? Like, what is the Jewish feast they're going to have to celebrate?
Passover.
And how long is Jesus separated from his mother?
3 days. Mm-hmm. Why, this is starting to be a premonition of something, isn't it?
It is, indeed. And so when Mary goes up again at Passover and is separated from her son because he is doing the will of the Father, 3 days later, she's not expecting to find the dead in the tomb. She's expecting to find the living, Christ having returned to her. And so we're left to kind of put those pieces together. We're told Mary ponders these things in her heart, but it makes sense if, like, that this is why, you know, Luke doesn't tell you this is what you're supposed to draw away from this passage. But once you see it in light of the resurrection, it's like, oh, of course. She, like, how did we miss this?
Yeah, she is the one who gets it. The disciples, they're a little confused. They're incredulous. In fact, when the women come and tell them, they say, oh, well, this is women talking.
I know.
That's like, come on. They don't know what it means. They do go to, Peter and John go to investigate, which is another great passage, which we can come to. But
what, John running faster than
Peter?
Yeah,
so exactly.
Why does the gospel report that?
There's actually, I think, a very important reason the gospel reports that.
I'm going to tell you, though.
And it's not just because he's like recording his PR.
No, go ahead.
Well, he's a younger man, and he's faster than Peter, right?
Yeah, but I think that I might know why Joe is going to say the gospel records, but I don't know.
This is why I love that particular detail.
Yes.
Graham Greene.
I knew you were going to talk about Graham Greene. Yeah.
Graham Greene in an interview said, this for me is evidence this is a true story.
Right. He says, this looks like a news report. It doesn't look like somebody made this up.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing, Joe, that the reason
you're
going
to... You've got a profound theological reason.
No, I don't think he does. I think that Joe's going to say the reason that this reported is because that's how it happened.
Oh, no, I think that's also true. I was going to go for the profound theological reason.
Okay, go ahead.
There's a temple image that's going on here that the tomb has become the Holy of Holies. And so there's this little detail that is reported in multiple of accounts of the evangelists that Jesus is laid in a tomb in which no one had ever been laid. And you might think, like, why is that an important detail? Well, for the same reason that Mary's perpetual virginity is important. Because the Jewish idea of holiness is a thing set aside for God is only set aside for God. Like, you don't use the chalice at Mass for a tea party. It's inappropriate. That's not a knock against tea parties. It's just to say a thing set aside for God is set aside only for God. You can't put even the fine china in the Ark of the Covenant. And so no one else before or after Jesus ever is laid in that tomb. And so his tomb is treated like the Holy of Holies, where the Ark of the Covenant was within the temple. And only the high priest would go in. So John reaches the tomb first, but did not go in.
Sure.
This is John 20, verses 4 to 5. Instead, he lets Peter go in first. And even Protestant scholars observing this will say, yeah, that actually looks... James Jordan is who I have in mind here, that Peter is acting like the high priest would act.
Oh.
And so it actually shows something of the authority Peter has, and John's deference to him plays this important role. So I think it's all of those things. Why did he mention it? Because it's true, because it's the kind of thing one remembers when they're giving you their own eyewitness testimony.
Right.
And because there's this deeper temple imagery and Jewish imagery that many of us now, without that background, can kind of completely overlook or just completely miss.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was going to say, so the women are a little incredulous. The disciples are a little incredulous. They go to investigate. Mary Magdalene, of course, it's revealed to her right away. But the people who are, I think, a little ready to believe are the Sadducees. I think they're frightened when they get the report from these soldiers who have been frightened by the angel. There's a kind of an earthquake sound or whatever, and the stone is rolled back. They're knocked out of fear. They desert their post, and probably, now this is, the details here are not given, but they do go find. There's a conversation between them and the Sadducees, the Jewish leaders. Maybe there were Pharisees there, but probably Sadducees, right, Joe? Because the Pharisees might have been inclined to believe in the resurrection. So
right.
The Sadducees were the ones who said
resurrection didn't happen. Yeah. They weren't just against Jesus' resurrection.
So,
they didn't like the idea of resurrection
so
at all.
The Sadducees, I think, are remembering that our Lord had said, I will rise. Now, they may have... just been thinking like the Pharisees' resurrection and maybe not thinking he was going to rise from the dead. But I think now when the soldiers come to report, now
they're like, oh, no.
I actually think they're the ones who are...
They believe it.
...readier to believe because then they have to set up...
A big lie.
A bribe.
Yeah.
They have to bribe the soldiers And these guys who have deserted their post are Roman guards.
Employees. Now,
yeah, I mean, they may not be Romans ethnically, but they are in the employ of the Roman army.
Right.
What penalty do you face for deserting your post
That's
as a soldier?
Death.
Yeah, probably.
You die. For.
So the Sadducees say, well, we'll make it right. If it comes to Pilate's attention, we'll make it right. So we're going to bribe you. We're going to bribe Pilate.
Yeah.
Right? So they are.
Oh, so they believe it.
They're
That's
deeply
an interesting
concerned.
Take, Chris. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the other funny part about this is, and so Matt, is it Matthew? Matthew reports, so they told the story that his disciples came and took him when we were asleep. And then that's the story that the Jews believe. And so Matthew's writing this, I don't know, what, 30 years later or so?
I think it's a hugely debated question about exactly when somewhere around.
Somewhere around there, very well. So 30 years later, this is obviously still the story that the Jews are telling. Those disciples came to get him, and maybe it's the story believing Jews still tell one another. I don't know. But there's a gaping problem with this. And it's
namely,
that,
if they're asleep, yeah, how do they know?
Yeah,
which
the,
of your body?
The principal witnesses that you're offering, Mr. Sadducee,
is, they're claiming to be have been
they
asleep,
were asleep
and still know.
That was that's your those are your witnesses.
Yeah,
we
but
were
that,
asleep.
But it's wonderful. But you know, this is that falls into that whole.
That's
idea.
That's in St. Augustine. I didn't come up with that.
That the counter witness is sometimes the best witness in this sense. That well, this definitely even after 2,000 years. If there was this move to create this lie, it means there was a body in a tomb and it was lost.
Sure.
It's missing. All the modern scholars who go, oh, Jesus wouldn't have even had a tomb. He was just thrown in the garbage or something. You know, like, no, even the counter witness of the time tells you there was a tomb, they knew where the body was, and that body was not there on Easter Sunday.
Right.
Yeah, this is one of those things that I think modern people are just missing, that even the crucified, at least the Jews would bury even those who'd been crucified. And Josephus tells us that directly, not talking about Christ, in a completely different context. He points out an instance where this wasn't observed and how barbaric it was that people were being killed in the city and they weren't even being afforded a decent burial after being crucified. And it's like, okay, well, there you go. So the idea that they're just randomly, you know, leaving the body out or any of these things, no, that's the care for the, you know, the bodies of the dead was significantly high enough that it, like, we're just applying modern assumptions on what this would have looked like that are historically contradicted by the facts.
All right, I got to take a very quick break, and we will come back and continue our conversation about the resurrection of the Lord and also what it means today. And I want to give you guys a little interesting fact that Luke gave me about videos people are watching on Catholic Answers related to Easter. We'll do all of that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Are you looking to study Catholic theology in a formal way with the guidance of faithful scholars? Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by the Augustine Institute, offering master's degrees in theology, pastoral theology, and Catholic education with flexible study options on campus, online, or both. The Augustine Institute equips students to serve Christ and His church in schools, parishes, dioceses, apostolates, and the home. Learn more today at augustine.edu.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
I had called in, I think, a month or so ago, and I had told you guys I was in my RCIA program, and I had wondered about what I could do more to get more involved with the church and such. Well, Saturday, I am finally having my confirmation, and I wanted to thank you guys for giving me all the information and having your program on here that has helped me so much. I cannot tell you enough how much it has helped me.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Happy Easter to you. We're celebrating Easter by having a flannel panel program. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. Chris Check, our guest. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Flannel panel, we put on flannel shirts and we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And some of you are off and you don't usually listen at this time. And maybe you're discovering us for the first time. If you'd like to know more about Catholic Answers, you can go to Catholic.com. That's our website, Catholic.com, second most visited Catholic website in the world after... who's first?
The Vatican's website?
Oh, the Vatican. That's right. The Vatican's
actually,
first.
Is that true?
That's what the statistic I've been given.
Is it not possible Catholic.com is visited more than the...
Oh, more than the Vatican? Oh, we might be first?
What's
up? The president wants to know. all right.
Look, dearly as I love everyone at the Holy See, my website's a lot better.
Not even the Pope loves everyone at the Holy See. Come on, man. You think we get more hits than
I don't know if we do or not, but I know that if you want...
I'm trying to remember who even told me that. I've been saying it for a long time, so...
I just checked, and at least the thing I'm seeing, the Vatican gets more hits. We are 26,000th in the world. They're 11,000th in the world in terms of global ranking for websites.
Oh, okay.
Wait, there's only 26,000 websites more visited than Catholic.com?
We're big time, Joe. We are literally big time. The first site that I found, so I don't know.
All right. I didn't realize this was something you could actually research. It was just a statistic someone in the building told me, and I've said it for years. So.
I think if you want clear and engaging prose about the Catholic faith, you should come to Catholic.com.
We're not attacking the Vatican website, though. Although,
oh, good.
I will absolutely.
I think the Pope does love everyone in the Vatican. It was just a little smart aleck remark. I apologize.
Sometimes our prose is a little clearer
than the Vatican's prose. Oh, good Lord!
Yes.
I know, but they got a large audience to consider. Sometimes I think like you see something weird in a document or something, and you go, you know, it's probably somebody was like, oh, the church in Botswana doesn't do it that way, or you know, the church in Japan takes like they got so many things to think about.
Here's what I'm gonna say, Cy.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you read something on the Vatican's website,
yeah,
and you want to know what it means, come to Catholic.com.
All right.
We'll explain it.
Very, very good. A couple points about Darren, who's running the audio for this right now. And two things. One, I believe we're going to establish a new system where you would give me a hand signal when we've gone on too long We're still under that system. All right. When we go on a topic, when we're going on a tirade that's too long, Darren will give us the move it along, boys, hand signal. All right.
Can we put a curtain up there to
not see him? I'm the only one who could see him from all of us, so I'll have to convey that to you.
So I want to just make everyone very clear. Direct all of your complaints to Darren.
To Darren, yeah. If we talk too much
at Darren.
yes. Darren at Catholic.com. Send it there. All right, so the second thing about Darren is right before the show, I was saying to him, it's weird because we have to pre-record this, but it's weird that we're in Lent. We're actually in Holy Week recording this, and you have to be Easter-y to record it and then go back to Lent, and it's uncomfortable. And I wondered if the two of you feel that.
I do feel it, exactly.
Very much so.
Yeah, it's weird.
There's a word that we would normally be saying if this were actually Easter Monday when we're recording.
Did you notice I've tried to say it, and I just like, I don't feel like saying it.
It doesn't feel right. I was going to see if we could have Bender add it in post. You know, we could just say, like, yeah, America, and he could change it to a different A word.
Right. And, the other A word that you can...
The Lord is risen from the dead, America. But it just sounds like I'm jingoistic now.
Right. There probably are churches where that's exactly what they say.
Speaking of which, did you two gentlemen see President Trump's message from Palm Sunday?
I heard someone read it on the air.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, I think he did not write it.
No, he shouldn't write it. I think that's right.
I also think it was written by a Catholic. In fact, I'm almost certain. You can tell by the tone and the content of it. It's deeply Catholic. But he speaks.
Yeah, I thought it was a very good message. I had pretty mixed feelings about the way. So, okay, let's...
I'm going to bring it up. So you talk about it for a second. I'll bring it up so I can read it. Because he always used to love.
He speaks of the redemption of mankind, the crucifixion, the opening of the gates of heaven.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
This, it reminded me a little bit of I always liked Queen Elizabeth's Christmas
very
message.
Similar. That's exactly what I thought
did
of
you
too,
think
si.
That too?
Yep.
Yeah, it was like, yep. Oh, she's a Christian. Like, yep. it was like, a Christian. Like, I don't mind if some political leader who's not Christian just kind of says, you know, Happy Easter or Merry Christmas or whatever. And
right.
just like, just there's polite. No reason that they should make a statement of faith. They don't share the faith with us. But it is kind of refreshing when the Queen of England speaks like a Christian about a Christian holiday. And that's what I think you're saying President Trump did in this.
He did. And people and his detractors and I have objections to his policies. But his detractors are going to say, oh, he didn't write it. He doesn't mean it. This is propaganda or it's posturing. But there it is over his signature. And I don't recall a statement of that tone and content from the previous occupant of the White House.
I have to quite honest with you, however, I'm not a real great historical record on Palm Sunday messages from the president. Like, I mean, they could all be fantastic. I wouldn't know. Like, when's the last time you heard one reported? But you had something you want to say, Joe.
Well, this one, I think an important bit of historical context. Like, I am sympathetic to those people who say both this is a beautiful the Christian faith, and there's obviously a political angle for the president to be saying this. But it's worth considering kind of what that angle would be. Namely, last year, in the final year of President Biden's time as president, Easter fell, if memory serves, on March 31st, which, unbeknownst to, I think, ordinary people, was also National Trans Visibility Day.
Right.
And so rather than commemorating Easter Sunday, the White House put out a statement acknowledging Trans Visibility Day. Now, this is, regardless of one's religious views, stupid politics, because only the most radical fringe on the left is going to be excited about or aware of this fake holiday. And to is the glaring kind of snub of Easter Sunday by comparison really stood out.
Yeah, it's bad, you know, politics, if it's nothing else.
It is, if you are living in a majority Christian country, even if a lot of those people maybe don't practice the faith deeply, to gloss over that while celebrating a radical political movement looks anti-Christian. Looks like you're not just indifferent to, I mean, at best, you're unaware of what's going on in most of the country, that this is an important day, the holiest day of the year for most Americans. It's, at worst, like it looks like an intentional snub. I mean, I'm reminded of Google, where seemingly every holiday we're celebrating except for the Christian ones. And that kind of thing, people notice it. Those kind of snubs don't go overlooked. And so I think it is appropriate to give some kind of commemoration of Easter. You know, I don't know what else to make of it other than I'm grateful to see a recognition that Christ died and rose from the dead, and that this is something that you can affirm in a Christian country that doesn't violate other people's, you know, disbelief in that fact.
Well, and opened the gates of heaven.
Yeah.
So,
well,
he's talking about a supernatural event here in salvation history.
Oh, this is this without question, this is a Christian statement about Holy Week.
Yes, it
and
is.
And so the president is
declaring Christian doctrine.
Right, but it's not he's not making a government statement. This is the presidential message. The president can say what he wants. Like, I if people are offended by this, I think that's silly to be offended
by.
I agree with you.
I think it's like, striking that a president in his message is declaring Christian doctrine. It's not the same as we remember Jesus was born on Christmas Day and we all have happy feelings about one another. No, he's saying this man was crucified and died and rose from the dead and opened the gates of heaven. This is a metaphysical statement by the president.
Now, the statement comes from Melania and I. So it's from his wife. And I don't – is Melania a Catholic? Do you know? I had heard
– It's hard to – I mean, she advocates for abortion in her autobiography.
Oh, okay.
But I think she has some kind of Catholic or Orthodox –
Well, there's a reason. I'm going to read this paragraph to you, and I'd be interested. Let me read just a couple sentences after the general greeting he said all the things that Chris just said. He and Melania say, and I understand that someone wrote this for them.
But that's the way you're supposed to do it. Like, it's perfectly, like, do you, are you under the impression that presidents write all the things they say?
That's
foolish.
I do.
Are you under that impression?
No. I write everything I say.
Oh, you write
everything? I am a president.
All right. Well, that's a good point. Yes. I apologize, Chris. I retract.
Oh, so, actually, but this... Brooke helps me with thank you notes.
I was just saying, I have a few people who help you write some of your better work.
beginning with Christ's triumphal entry into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday and culminating in the Paschal Triduum, which begins on Holy Thursday with the Mass of the Lord's Supper, followed by Good Friday and reaching its pinnacle on the Easter Vigil on Holy Saturday night, this week is a time of reflection for Christians to memorialize Jesus' crucifixion and prepare their hearts, minds, and souls for his miraculous resurrection from the dead. The phrase that stood out there.
Triduum.
Not Triduum.
Triduum, Mass of the Lord's Supper.
Yeah, Mass,
and then Easter Vigil on Holy Saturday night.
I mean, this sounds like the Catholic Church talking.
Of course
right
it
there.
Is.
Right.
It's written by
a
Catholic.
I don't think a Protestant could actually affirm this Palm Sunday message. So,
yeah.
There is something kind of funny about that fact. Like, I think the president is maybe not aware of how Catholic that declaration is.
Yeah, because you might have a Lord's Supper celebration, but you wouldn't call it a Mass, right? If you're not
right. So I guess I should say supper. You would use the word
triduum. Maybe Lutheran say triduum. I don't know.
All right, right back with more Flannel Panel, Catholic Answers Live. Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics, and where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carla Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they're our allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whyweearecatholic.com.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, celebrating the resurrection today. It's okay to say Happy Easter today because Easter ends. This is when Easter ends for Catholics, next Sunday. Also on Pentecost.
Yeah, 50 days.
Also never. Like, it's like Catholics, we're like, okay, yeah, we get it that Easter is the holiest day of the year. But Easter never ends. I mean, you could say Happy Easter forever.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a serious date. So people listening may not have understood the point you're making there liturgically. There's what's called the octave of Easter, running from Easter Sunday until what used to be called Lourdes Sunday is now called Divine Mercy Sunday.
And wait, what was it called?
If you read the text for the Liturgy of the Hours during those days, every day is treated as if it were not just a commemoration of Easter, but as if it were Easter itself.
Well, every day in the octave is a solemnity in the new rite, right?
I did not know that. Every single day is a solemnity.
So all 8 days are just treated like
Easter.
That's
the highest feast.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's also true of the awkward
call, it, call into work.
Yeah.
I know. Well, we're not working today. We'll be in tomorrow for the Feast of Tuesday, but a solemnity all week. I didn't know that. So then after the octave, it's still Easter though.
Yeah, it's like Easter tide. You know, we're celebrating Easter time in the same way that after Christmas Day, you still keep the kind of spirit of Christmas alive for a while. This is what happens within the kind of 40 days until Christ's ascension, and then that gets a little muddled with
which was on a Thursday, by the way. I just want to make clear. It was on a Thursday. We know that.
No, Christ used to have ascended to heaven on Thursday, but now he ascended on a Sunday.
Yes, it depends if you're in Nebraska or Kansas.
Yeah, depending on what diocese you're in the United States.
Sunday. The one day we know what day it was.
Yeah, it's literally called ascension.
There's a few days we know, but yeah, you're right.
Easter we know. Yeah, it's not a movable feast.
Easter is a movable feast.
Yeah, that's true. Easter's moved, but it can't move from a Sunday.
So it's the one day we know for sure what day of the week it was. Is there another one, Joe?
Easter Sunday.
Or Good Friday.
It was a Sunday.
Yeah.
Right. You're saying we don't have
confidence in the date. I mean, I like the tradition that the 25th was the crucifixion. So whatever, that would have been 28th. Six, seven.
Are you saying we don't know the day of the week, or we don't know the day of the year?
Oh yeah. Okay. Very good. You're right. So we do know it's Sunday. All right. I am corrected. Thank you.
This is a confusing thing about even the term movable feast. Is every feast is movable in one of those two directions?
Well, Orthodox Easter. When is that this year? When are the Orthodox?
It's same day.
It's pretty close.
We're on the same day this year.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, this is a good year. Yeah, I got a notice from a friend like 2 weeks after Prime Day. You know when Prime Day is in the summer where you get all the deals on Prime? And it said, Happy Orthodox Prime Day. Oh, it was. I thought that was funny.
How do you prove you're Orthodox to Amazon?
Oh, yeah, right. How do you prove that you get the deals now? So we're celebrating. We're all celebrating. So
it's also slightly less ecumenically. It was also the day that Pope Leo IX died, who was the pope when the schism happened between the East and West.
Well, all those things are happening on the same day?
Amongst other things.
I feel like we should have some kind of jubilee or something this year. Everything's working out great. We should have a jubilee.
It's very hopeful.
Yeah, it's a hopeful sign. Okay, I wanted to tell you guys some news that Luke Bender gave me. I would have him come in here and give the news himself. Is he here? Is he sitting here? I would have him give the news himself. But he speaks in paragraphs. Actually, he speaks in he's a computer guy. He'll give you all the details.
Ones and zeros.
Yeah, he speaks basically in ones and zeros. Exactly. He told me a very popular search on our site now and the most popular video from last week that we did is now How to Become Catholic. I thought I'd share that with you guys.
I didn't know that.
A little bit of Easter news. And I think as an apostolate, we should do more about how to become Catholic.
I agree with you. There's
a lot of people they're one way or another, they're getting convicted. And it's really happening. Like a lot is going on in this regard. And we're seeing an uptick in people's interest in the Catholic faith.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It actually is one of those things I was struck by a certain kind of irony. People asking at the end of Lent, where if you have a parish that doesn't have any more dynamic approach to bringing people into the faith, you're going to kind of tell them, well, you got a year to wait. And, you know, we'll start preparing you, you know, halfway through that.
Right.
But I hope that's good as an impulse to parishes to take seriously the job of evangelization and to work with people on their individual journeys, because not everybody's walk with Christ is going to be synced up to like an academic year, like a lot of RCIA is.
Yeah, I like a parish. Someone comes to the parish, first of all, who's ever greeting people at the parish? If they come and say, "I'm interested in becoming Catholic. How do I become Catholic?" Maybe evince a bit of joy at that, and not just the bureaucratic. Well, you missed it this year. But you can get on the curriculum for next year. But yeah, there's got to be right, we've got to be welcoming. If this, this seems to be a trend, and I'm going to share an article with you from Great Britain in a moment. It seems to be a trend. We better attend to that. This is an important thing. We've got to take people seriously who are coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let me give you a little bit of something from England. What was the newspaper that it was in?
Telegraph?
The Telegraph, yeah. In the Telegraph. Oh, Lord, I'm having a problem finding it on my computer.
It talked about the regrowth or rebirth or...
Oh, yeah, the extraordinary resurgence of Catholic faith in Great Britain.
Resurgence.
Yeah, resurgence of... And I have to tell you, as an American, I don't know how... those of you listening in the British Isles, as an American, the news seems bad out of Great Britain all the time. Like we're not getting a lot of things are going great in Great Britain.
That soccer team won.
The British soccer team won?
Yeah, there was a soccer team in England and they won a game.
There is. There is the Wrexham phenomenon.
Isn't that where they broke off from the EU?
That was Brexit. Come on now. Oh. Keep up. Wrexham is in Wales.
I was for Brexit.
As an American, I was very much for Brexit.
I think I was very much.
We did it first, technically.
I thought we did a Brexit already. Right. It worked out great for us. You should do it.
Yeah, if I were subject to the empire, I would be for Brexit.
The European thing hasn't made sense.
I might have gotten you slightly distracted, so I'm sorry about that.
All right. So the news. This is what I'm getting out of Great Britain is. I'm just saying this is what we hear in America. I'm not saying this is what's going on in Great Britain, but you hear about extreme tensions between Muslims and Christians.
Well, there's something like, 2,000 mosques now.
Is there? And then
maybe that's France.
You hear that London is a kind of a seat of world radical Islam. And so we're not talking about nice things. We're talking about people who are violent. We hear about working class being pretty much excluded from the economic life of England and getting beat up. This is what we're hearing in America. You call me and tell me if I'm wrong.
Well,
about
by the way, you know what you hear this about, on? You hear what? This on the BBC. If you listen to the BBC, so it's not.
Well, I do listen to the BBC. Yeah, so I hadn't thought about that. But that's right.
That's how I know these things.
But the other thing is, you can't pray silently anymore.
Oh, yeah.
This just shocks Americans. Maybe it shocks the British. I don't know. But to an American to hear that a woman got arrested for praying silently that sounds like, do you not know that you're the bad guys? Like, this is really bad. You can't do that. So then you read a story like this, the extraordinary resurgence of the Catholic faith in Britain, and you go, oh, well, that's interesting. And they have this young man who was on a TV show called The Traitors, which is a British TV show. So it probably was 4 episodes long. I don't know.
And by the way, it was better than any American TV show.
Did you watch it?
No. All British TV is better than American TV.
I mean, the US adaptations tend to be worse. There's a lot of bad British TV.
I don't watch TV, so I wouldn't know. Dramas. I devote my time only to spiritual reading and praying the rosary, so I don't know what you guys are talking about.
There's a great new British TV show I want to recommend.
Go ahead.
Should we save it for...
A recommendation coming up. But this young man, Harry Clark, he was on that TV show. He's 24 years old, and he's got tattoos, and I took interest in the fact that his tattoos are Catholic-themed tattoos. And he's 24, and he's Catholic, and he says God understands him like nobody else understands him. It's a very personal kind of Catholicism, and they use that as the intro into this story, which we spoke about briefly. We have spoken about briefly before. But this story about how young people, particularly young men in England, are becoming interested in the Catholic Church. And let me just read what Archbishop Mark O'Toole says about that. Archbishop Mark O'Toole from the... he's from the largest diocese in England, but he says... some have suggested that these young men who are coming to the church, the same ones who've been persuaded by influencers to be misogynists and opt for highly traditionalist views, but it's more nuanced than that, says Archbishop O'Toole. They're not extremists or fundamentalists, but they have been looking for something And the words they use a lot about the Catholic Church is coherence and consistency. I just want to see what you two thought of that. I mean, as from inside the Catholic Church, we often complain about a lack of coherence and consistency, but from outside, that is not what people are seeing.
Well, yeah, I think that's quite right, especially when you say compared to what? You know, like we will rightly, I think, critique people within the Catholic Church who argue we need to be less coherent and less consistent to be more amenable to the modern world. And I think what Archbishop O'Toole is rightly pointing out is that what draws people to the church isn't something, you know, oppressive, but it is something countercultural. Now, I thought it was actually very funny in the line before what you quoted, where he said, "We notice that large numbers who join us are young men. They come after they have surfed the net."
Wow.
Like, if you want to see the state of the church, it's in the fact that we are led by people who still use the expression "surfed the net," who are.
Yeah, I didn't find that anachronistic at all.
But that
I believe that. But if you want to understand Catholic answers,
yeah, right. One out of the three of us noticed that that was an old-timey term. What a striking thing, though, because we talk about the internet.
Is there a better expression
than "surf the net"?
Yeah,
the Joe. World Wide Web. I'm just kidding.
So surf the web.
I'm joking. The web and the net are
but
both
what's
like
the, what's
20
the
years
verb?
Old.
What's the verb to go idly
online.
Exploring?
They lived online. They've been online.
Yeah, they. I mean, it depends how you do it, like doom scrolling or
think,
you know, researched
I think
online.
Surf the net is poetic.
I don't think he was saying it's not poetic.
I don't know how one surfs on a net. It seems like a muddled expression. Mm. Surfing a web is even worse because you just think that seems like the least. Like
surfable thing
you could surf on.
Let's not get bogged down here, though, because
okay,
Darren will give me the signal.
I meant it as a quasi-serious point, though, that even in the face of a not particularly tech-savvy church, people are still going online and finding plenty of reasons to become Catholic.
You know what, though? Don't you think that they're finding Matt Frad? They're finding Catholic Answers Live? They're finding Dr. David Anders? This is something I really don't think Catholics, we talked about it last time, and I once again, we're actually doing a good job for once of using media. And the media that we're using is podcasts, and like you had a blog before you were even famous, Joe Heschmeyer. You had Shameless Popery, and I just think we should, you know, like there's a lot of awful Catholic content. There's a lot of awful every kind of content. But to the sincere searcher who needs to find out what is the Catholic faith, do I belong there? They can find it. There's good stuff out there, and it's convincing. And like these young people that find, like, let's just say Jimmy Akin, for example. You know, I listened to his podcast the other day on the gospel. What is the gospel? And I don't know. If I was a young man just surfing around, and I found a Catholic with the tone that Jimmy takes and describe what does the New Testament mean when it says, like Jesus, you know, repent and believe the gospel in the first chapter of Mark's gospel. There's Jesus. Well, what is Jesus talking about when he says repent and believe the gospel? Jimmy does 45 minutes on it where he explains all the different takes, all the different ways somebody can understand the meaning of the gospel, and then he explains what a proper Catholic understanding of the gospel is, what the gospel message is.
That's right.
The fact that that's there and anybody can get it at any time, I think that's a bigger deal than we've been letting on.
I agree with what you're saying, Si. The thing that interests me, well, of course, I want to make sure that Catholic Answers continues to provide first-rate content and that our fellow workers in the vineyard do. I'm deeply interested in this search itself, particularly when it comes to men, a gender with which I have more experience.
Yeah.
So
for those who don't know, you have a bunch of sons and no daughters.
Well, I was also speaking of myself. Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, also. I am happy to learn the content is there, and that's a cause for celebration. But also that this search is continuing. So young men are coming to understand that modernity has lied to them for going on a century now, at least since the post-war period, right?
Yeah.
that it's actually sort of bad to be a man or bad to be masculine.
Yeah.
Right. And so as a consequence, you get a reaction to that, which is a kind of bad masculinity. I guess it's called toxic masculinity.
Well, yeah, you get the crazy Andrew Tate kind of meanness.
Right. Or even some of the right wingers here in this country, the guy that Trent finds himself having to correct from time to time. I forget his name.
I don't actually know who that is.
Yeah, he's a...
I should listen to Trent Horn. I really got...
I'm totally blanking on Nick Fuentes.
Nick Fuentes.
Oh, yeah. So you get a kind of almost cartoonish masculinity because they just don't know what real masculinity is like.
Correct.
I would suggest you see this as kind of a broader... Sorry, I don't want to interrupt your point. I'll
just finish. So they are landing there first... I think a lot of them anyway, and the Andrew Tate, the Nick Fuentes, surely there are other examples, but they are unsatisfied.
Yeah.
This is actually something in my heart is telling me, in my conscience, this is not where I should be landing. And then a few of them, and a growing number apparently, if this article is to be believed, are locating the fullness of masculine expression in, of course, exactly where it would be, in the church founded by the man who was the fullness of masculine expression.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think it's I'll just finish right here. This is not so much of a new story, particularly the reference here to kind of first they land on maybe the hard right or something. I would encourage everyone to read the autobiography of my friend Joe Pierce. I think it's called Race with the Devil.
I
think it's
yeah.
called Race with the Devil, who actually went through this trajectory, by the way, without the internet, before the internet, through Our Lady, through G.K. Chesterton. But this is exactly what this young man was looking for, as young men did in the time that he was coming of age, in street fighting, in race politics, in white identity, landed in jail more than once. Someone finally hands him a copy, I think, of Orthodoxy, and then he makes his way into the Catholic Church and is one of the church's most articulate and humble and beautiful defenders of the fullness of her tradition,
yeah.
not just theological, but literary. So this is a great story, and may there be many more Joe Pierce's coming from it.
I'll tell you what, I'll take a quick break. I want to read you a little bit more from the story. It's Easter, so let's talk about the good that's out there. When we talk about the internet and we talk about young men, we're mostly talking about
pornography
and gaming and violence and it's amazing to see hundreds of young men coming into the Catholic Church in Great Britain because of what they're finding online. We'll talk more about that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live. One of the biggest mistakes a Christian can make is to try to do good without God's help. Saint Therese said, when we trust only ourselves and not God, our soul becomes incapable of virtue. Her remedy? Works of charity. And the greatest work of charity is to share the gospel. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we encourage you to share the gospel with someone who doesn't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
Carry the faith wherever you go. Catch up with the latest news from Washington, D.C., the Vatican, and the world on all of our EWTN news platforms, including EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, the Catholic News Agency, and EWTN News In-Depth. Download the EWTN app at EWTNapps.com today.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. It's Easter Monday. Happy Easter to you. Joe Heschmeyer here, Chris Check here. We're all wearing flannel shirts. That means it's flannel panel. And we're having we're trying to have a positive hour, and we'll try to have another positive hour tomorrow. Because if you can't be happy on Easter and talk about happy things on Easter and find the good, what are you doing? What are you doing? So there's lots of good out there, too. And this is a fascinating article. From last week in The Telegraph about the resurgence of interest in the Catholic Church in Great Britain. And I want to read what comes from a young man, but one of the things that they, I want to just point out, they do some numbers in here about the numbers that are coming. And some of them are the same numbers that we saw in that article we did last time we did Flannel Panel, the article from Luke Koppen in The Pillar about the numbers that are coming into the right of elect in dioceses. And it's way up in some of these British dioceses. They point to the fact that both John Paul and Benedict visited Great Britain. Tony Blair went to Mass. It even says Boris Johnson is a Catholic. I did not know that about Boris Johnson. But so I guess what they're saying is, look, there's some of these public images of Catholicism for people to see. But most of it, at least according to Archbishop Mark O'Toole in Great Britain, comes down to they're finding the stuff on the internet. And I'll tell you what, I feel very proud of Catholic Answers, though. I think we're strong on the internet. And I think some of these young men probably listen to Joe Heschmeyer. They probably listen to Trent Horn. But let me read you just, Chris, just one from this young man named Will Mortimer, who has the single most British name any human being has ever had. His name is,
I think Benedict Cumberbatch might still beat him, but it's going to be a close contest.
Will Mortimer says, there's
you need a hyphen, though, for you know.
He says, there's so much disorder in the world, and I did not have any meaning in my life. Catholic theology has a coherence for me. It makes sense, gives me a connection with Christ. For me, it's a lifeline and a reason to continue. Oh, praise God for that. I can confidently say that Christ is the light of the world. Will, you're winning. For Clark, too, God is a lifeline. I was saying to God, give me a sign, give me a sign. And then the pilgrimage program, which is from one of these archdioceses, came along. A sign to show that God is there and that I am not alone. I will let you gentlemen comment on that, but I would just want to say to young people, you should pray the same way. Ask God to give you a sign. He'll give you a sign. He wants you in his church. But what do you think of what Will said there? I think it's a magnificent confession of faith, first of all. There's pretty much no better words than you can say that you can say than Christ is the light of the world.
Yeah, it is a striking reminder. I know we were starting to say this before the break, that the modern world has failed to deliver on its promises. It doesn't create light and peace and order. It clearly has not done so. And a growing number of young people are responding to that. And they're responding to that in one of maybe three or four directions. One was just to lean into the disorder and chaos in a way that's deeply unsatisfying. One is a sort of man-made desire for order, which I think explains a lot of the manosphere that we were talking about before the break. But then one is to realize that the kind of order that we need, the right relationship of everything to everything else, has to come from outside, and it has to be transcendent. And that Christ alone can provide that sort of structure to reality. And I think we see that in the desire for the Catholic Church. I think we see a growing number of public thinkers who are seeming to point in more that direction. More obviously, I'm thinking of people like Jordan Peterson here, that there is this growing sense that there's a brokenness in our world that can't be fixed, not just within us individually, but in us broadly, that can't be fixed but for divine intervention. And thanks be to God, we've got that intervention.
Si, you mentioned that typically when we talk about young men and the internet, we're lamenting the widespread and deleterious effects of pornography, which are true and horrible. My concern when I read a story like this, and it's going to sound a little odd coming from someone at the helm of an apostle that gets most of information out because of the World Wide Web, is that young men who do find the faith, whether it's through Trent's or Joe's podcast or you mentioned Matt or Jimmy's, that they remain living in the medium too much and don't get out and live in the real world. It's good to leave off pornography and take up Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World or right. Jimmy Akin podcast or whichever it may be. But you can't stay there. You have to get married or go into the priesthood. Those are your choices, or the religious life. The single life's not a vocation. And then also, live life day to day. whatever that involves, you know, but chiefly the growing of a family.
Yeah, yeah. But maybe it's a doorway where they will get out of the online world, where they'll go, oh, there's a real world I got to get out of.
Well, the sacraments.
Yeah, that's a very good point, right. The sacraments would do that. They ground you in reality, in the real world. We'll continue this conversation. There's so much good news, but here's the primary good news. The Lord is risen. He who laid down his life for us is the first fruits of the coming kingdom of God, and we have every reason to rejoice, but we'll give you some more newsy reasons to rejoice when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.